So we've talked about how to consume a promise, how to pass on a promise if you're calling an asynchronous function and you just want to pass on its resulting promise. And we've looked at how to create your own promise and return that. In all of these cases, the return value of our asynchronous function is a promise. But what I want to do now is I want to actually do something that results in a promise and then store that promise somewhere. And then some other process, it might be on a completely different page initiated by some other action by the user, I want there to check the results of that promise and see if it needs to, see if it has been completed. Now, you might wonder, since this says WinJS promise, you might wonder if this is just a Windows 8 thing. Is this just a Microsoft thing? Now, the WinJS version, the implementation of the promise is an implementation done in the WinJS library. So this isn't going to take out of the library and work in your website or anything like that. But again, you can go look at the code. In fact, here I am sitting on the WinJS promise in Visual Studio. I'm going to hit F12, and it's going to take me to the implementation of the promise object in the WinJS library. All of WinJS is completely open source. I'm going to scroll down, and I'm going to see exactly what they do in this WinJS library. I learned most of what I know about promises by looking through this code right here. So if you want to learn the guts of what happens inside of a promise, you can learn it by looking in here and seeing how they handle all of these various cases. And it's much the same as what I just showed you. Now, the stored promise, let's look at the code there, because what we're doing with that is a little different. In the stored promise, I'm calling this long task async promise, and instead of hanging a dot then off of it, instead I'm storing it as stored promise. Stored promise then, you can imagine much time passes here. Just imagine, much time passes here. We're in a completely different page, but a page that also has access to this stored variable. So maybe we pushed it into a namespace or in the global namespace or something. Much later, the stored promise can be added, a dot then can be added to our stored promise. And let's say that that stored promise says, you know what, I finished that 5 minutes ago. That just means that the then is going to execute right away. But the check has to be made to figure out whether that promise has actually been done. And so this is the valid way to do it. Now, what I want you to do, you all have the source for CodeShow. What I want to do is I want to show you how I implemented this exactly to make CodeShow work the way it does. So in CodeShow, all of the pages underneath the Pages folder are demos with the exception of Home. Home is the page that shows you the Home page, of course, shows you the tiles. And if you go to the Home.js, I'm going to go ahead and do some binding and stuff here, but when I do this binding, I need to know whether or not this data has been loaded. So let's actually go look at where the data is loaded. I do that in the default.js, which is under the JS folder. Let's look at default.js, and you'll see that in this immediate function, in default, at one point, the user activates CodeShow, it launches on their machine, and in that case, this event fires that says that the app has been activated. In that case, I want to call this load demos, and load demos returns a promise, just like I showed you, and it's stored right here. Now, because JavaScript is dynamic, I was able to actually just do app, which is, app already exists, app is the winjs.application, and I was able to just hang a new variable right off of app right there. And in that variable, I'm going to store the promise returned by the load demos. And this is going to fire the loading of all of these demo pages in the CodeShow project. And it's going to store that promise right there for our ability, and we have the ability to access that later if we want. Let's look at where we're actually looking for app.demos loaded. I'll find all the references, and I'll take you to each one. There's the first one. Here's the second one. That's just the initialization of it. And here's the third one. In the where we're implementing the search, you're going to learn how to do that in Extent tomorrow. Where we're implementing the search, we need to check and make sure that the data has been loaded if we're going to implement the search. So we just call app.demosLoaded, and maybe it happened 5 minutes ago. We hang a dot then off of it, and here we can go ahead and index our search. Okay? Let's look at one more spot. And actually, that's it. So that makes sure that our demos have been loaded, and then it can implement that that search for us, okay?
So one question that was asked that I think would be easy to do since you still have that screen open is, what are those EC and, you know, where did these EC and what was the other one, the P?
P.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
Good question.
You know, where did they come from? What populated them? That kind of a thing.
What is up with those? Here they are. This is in the code show page promises.js under the section of creating your own promise. When you create a promise, the promise when you instantiate an object, you're actually calling a constructor function. And that function is expecting certain parameters. If you passed in something different, it would not like you very much. You need to pass in what it's expecting. And it just so happens that the promise is expecting a function, and it's going to call that function. And so it's expecting that function to have three functions that are passed in, the first of which completes a promise, the second of which errors a promise, and the third of which reports progress on a promise. Now, I could call these anything I want. They don't have to be C, E, and P. They could
That's
be
right.
Fred, Charlie, and Paul.
Right.
There we go. Now, in order to complete my promise, I have to call Fred.
Yeah.
And actually, I probably should have started that with this.
I think that was good that you changed those around, because those are just what we're calling those three things. But
right.
When this promise actually gets executed, in other words, the function that we're passing in gets executed, those values are going to be supplied at that time. So what we call them here is not really relevant. So CEP, whatever the case is, it's going to be at a later time that those actually get populated with real functions. Right now, they're kind of like placeholders for future functionality that we haven't really defined at this point. We just know that we will.
Right. Absolutely. And that's the concept of a promise.
So, you know, I thought what would probably be a good idea, if you don't mind, is for me to also show just briefly on that errors page with regard to promises.
Yeah.
Just a real brief example of how you got to be a little careful when you're doing some of those kind of promises and how you can apply the errors.
Yeah.
Would that be okay?
You know what? That's a great idea, but I forgot there's one short demo on promises that I wanted to show.
Please.
And this is a fun one, because if you go to the XHR call, let's look at this on Code Show. This one is called winjs.xhr, mm-hmm. And when you run that, you can click this button to fetch a random movie from Netflix. And Commando was the random movie of the day. Let's try it again. Fetch a random movie, The Associate. Now it's pulling this back, and it's using promises because it's using an XHR call, which we'll talk about much, much more tomorrow, of course. But I want to show you exactly how this is done. And this is it right here. Now, I want you to notice that I told you that the then function itself returns a promise, and so you can chain them together, and that's actually what Michael's going to take you into this chaining. And I want to show you how I did this. I called the Netflix service asking it for its top 500 titles, and I told it that the only thing I need is its ID, the movie's ID. So this is going to return to me a relatively lightweight JSON object that's going to come back with 500 movies from Netflix. And then I'm going to pick a random number between 1 and 500 in the then, only after I've got those movies back. And I'm going to use this array function that I taught you, the map. And I'm going to pick a random movie out of those. But only after I've done all of that do I want to then call Netflix again, this time saying, I know what movie ID I want now. Now I want you to get me the name of the movie. So this is an extremely small JSON call, because all it's doing is asking for a specific movie and pulling back this one field about that movie. Okay? And so then that is jammed into the inner text of the results div, and that's how you get the random movie from Netflix. So chaining off of the then, how does that work? how do we handle our error case?
So the thing is that dealing with this asynchronous nature, and especially when we're chaining, you know, one of the questions that could come up is you have all of these promises have their own ability to respond to errors, and that's kind of interesting, right? I mean, they all have that capability. So what I'd like to do now is enter into the code screen here for the code show, and I'm specifically right now I'm in the errors.js, which is in the errors page. And when I'm doing this chain, I have this box promise chain done. So I'm going to click, and I'm going to do an asynchronous call, which that method, doAsync, is returning a promise. Inside of that, I then chain another function, and I return once again a doAsync. But this time, I think the thing that's really important to note is that this first function that was passed in, starting here and then ending here before this comma, that's the complete. But I then do this. I have this null value being passed in for the error. What, do I not care about errors? Do I think I'm that good? Especially when I'm chaining all of these? I mean, that's crazy. I do that in each case, if you'll notice. However, on my done method, I'm now passing in, and this is getting really crazy, I'm passing in a null where I should have put complete, and now I'm handling an error. It's crazy. If you think about it, I mean, we're saying no errors, no errors, no errors, and then at the very end when we're done, I'm not going to even give you a complete behavior, but I will give you an error one. Well, the reason for this and the reason why I have it on the screen like this is because I want to make sure that it's understood that when you're doing chaining, the best practice here is to have a done method at the end that becomes almost like a finally in a try-catch finally. You can kind of almost think of it that way. When we're done, if any one of those in the chain errors out, well, now you have a global error handler for it. You have something that says, okay, I will go to the done method and I'll call its error handler. So that's a little tricky. You have to kind of be aware of that scenario. But it even gets better. Let's go back to the code. The other thing that you could do is join promises. Now, the difference between chaining a promise and joining a promise is that joining a promise, instead of one being done and then calls the next one and then calls the next one, that's chaining. When you join promises, what you're doing now is you're saying, here, I want all three of you to go do something and do them all at the same time. So we're not waiting for one to finish. We want them all to execute asynchronously, and whoever is the longest one is the one that we're waiting on at the very end before we do our final whatever we're going to do. Well, if you're going to do that approach, then as I'm looking at this code here, you're going to realize that the then methods for each one of these do handle the errors. And in my done, I also have a do error. What I'm trying to say here is you want to handle errors when you're joining like this, because remember, in a chain means if anyone in that chain breaks, we need to go to the done. But when we're doing a join like this, when they're all firing off separately, you may want to handle each one of those promises uniquely, and that's why you do see an error handler in each one of those. So don't think just because we're doing some kind of an aggregate promise like this that you always just do it in the done. In this example, I also have error handlers in each one of these promises for a join. And in fact, I think for you to see this, there was a question about, you know, incremental progress, and I'm just going to showcase real quick when I run this, the differences are when I go to errors. So, right, or exception handling, excuse me, right here. So the first one says, click on a promise, it starts a promise, and I'm doing an incremental progress my own way. I just said, I want to see it complete, it completed. Now I'm going to go to the next one, and I know you can't read what's in that box, but it says, let's see it with a chain. So I'm clicking on the chain. Now, I happen to know that I intentionally throw an error right when it gets to 2. And then my my response is to say, you know, muhahaha, you blew it. So at least I handled it, though, and that was done with the done. Now I'm going to do it as a join, which means that even though one of them errored out, notice it kept going, and still all promises were completed. So we were able to handle that one that went bad from all the multiple ones, but it still did the other ones, which is a difference from the chain, where if it's chained, it will stop and none of the other ones will get caught.
And if you want a concrete example, you can feel free to go look at the Netflix by 10 example. The Netflix by 10 example is an actual case for using a join. We want to do we want to do some calls, and then only after all of those calls are complete do we want to finish.
Fantastic.
Couple more things we want to squeeze in here at the end. Definitely want you to know about web workers, and there is an example for web workers. Web workers are the new and only, pretty much the only, means of concurrency in JavaScript. If you go to the web worker example, you see simply, it doesn't mean too much just to see it running, but it says, the worker said, hey boss, I heard you say, hey there worker. That sounds like a tongue twister or something, but let's go look at the code. If you look at web worker, what we have is a JS file and then another JS file that's called task. Now the main JS file here is first of all instantiating this worker like this, and then it's subscribing to the worker's message function so that it can do something whenever the worker sends it a message, and then it's posting a message to the worker. Now let's go look at the worker. The worker is a short JS file. You've probably never seen anything like this unless you've done web workers. It doesn't have the document object model. There's a lot of differences to it. Mostly what all you do is you subscribe to your own onMessage function, and you determine what you want to do whenever you get a message. So what we've done here is establish a communication channel between the boss and the worker. And the boss can give messages to the worker, and the worker can give messages back to the boss. But the point is that the worker and the boss are on completely different threads. True concurrency here is what we're dealing with. So look at what the boss actually says. The boss says, hey there, worker. And then it also says, now if the worker tells me anything, go ahead and put that out on the screen with log. Tell me what the worker said. Now the worker says, when I get a message from my boss, I want to post a message saying, hey boss, I heard you say, and then whatever it is that the boss said. So the silly little back and forth conversation just shows that these two entities are able to talk to each other. There's a lot of stuff online about web workers, and you're welcome to go check all of that out there. But there's another concept in HTML5, in ECMAScript 5, and that is the concept of drawing a blank. The web workers, let me go back to my outline. WebSockets, HTML5 WebSockets. WebSockets are the ability to talk at a lower level than HTTP standard. Normally, HTTP is a single request, single response, we're done. WebSockets are the ability to send a request, open a channel of communication, and then speak in more real time with a server. Perfect, the obvious example is for chat applications where you want to be able to open a socket and then send messages back and forth between the client and the server in real-time chat. Some awesome examples around WebSockets. We don't have time to go into them exactly, but if you go to dev.windows.com and you search for the samples at the bottom left, actually just click on samples at the bottom left. That's down here. It'll take you to a list of hundreds of samples, even hundreds of them that apply specifically to JavaScript, 194 to be specific. And so if we look in there for WebSocket, we're going to get some good examples of WebSockets. And I recommend this Connecting with WebSockets sample. If you download that, you get a little PowerShell script that you can use to automatically install a WebSocket server on your machine. It happens very easily. You just run the PS1 file, and then you can open this Windows 8 app, and you can communicate with that WebSocket server by way of HTML WebSocket. So it'd be a good thing to run in there and learn. Okay, we talked about exceptions, promises, web workers, WebSockets. Just a little note about architectural patterns. Because we're dealing with JavaScript, and JavaScript is a dynamic language, it's good news for architectural patterns like MVVM. MVVM is a wonderful pattern that takes advantage of the fact that modern architectures have binding between our objects and our views. And we're going to talk more tomorrow about that binding, but for now, just know that in your application, you can use the MVVM pattern. You can create that binding between the two, and you can take all of the advantages of developing an app with that architectural pattern. So, of course, big topic, architectural patterns, but all we're going to say about it right now is just that the recommended pattern is MVVM, and it's a very good story in JavaScript. Finally, TypeScript. I saw one question in the chat about TypeScript. I do want to go ahead and address it. TypeScript is extremely exciting. We don't have time to dive into it too much right now, but Let me just get to the slide here. TypeScript, if you go to typescriptlang.org, you can get a good overview to TypeScript, and in fact, there's a link to play with it. Here's what TypeScript is. TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. All the beauty of JavaScript, it actually is JavaScript, but you get some awesome stuff for free. You get types, so you get the ability to define that something is of a certain type, and then you get that strong typing like you get in other languages. So if you're going to be doing a big app, to avoid some of the pains of scaled JavaScript apps that start to feel a little bit fragile when they get huge, look into TypeScript. There's a lot more about it online. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and look at some of the questions in the chat. Michael, why don't you join me and we can see if we can answer some of the questions. And
one of them from a listener was, you know, is there any way to hook on to swiping for touch devices? And I think I tried to reply to that, but the answer is stay tuned for tomorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah, tomorrow we're going to talk about capturing the click event, which Windows automatically translates as either mouse touch, or pen touch. So whatever pointer device you use, it's going to capture it. And you also have more abstract methods to capture it so that you can tell whether the user touched the screen with a pen, with a mouse, or with the finger.
Yeah. Another kind of observation I think this was made throughout the day is, hey, you guys kind of talked about some Windows 8 things, even though this was supposed to be kind of pure to the whole JavaScript, HTML, and CSS. And the thing is we do get that, there's been some times where you've seen a little implementations of things that will happen tomorrow. But we really did map these modules right to actually
skills measured.
That's right,
for
to the skills measured. Mm-hmm. So even though some of the implementations are kind of a sneak peek of tomorrow, we feel pretty confident that the content that you receive today really maps well to those skills that are measured.
It maps well, but in such an aggressive timeline, there's no way we're going to be able to cover everything there.
Right. And, you know, another on that note, there was some questions also regarding just where can we go online for some more content. I'm going to mention right away, some of you said you were dizzy and hurting due to some of the content. And, you know, promises can be one of those things that you have to really, you know, think about. So definitely codefoster.com, and especially that URL that you had where you made it so easy. Is it what, using-promises at the end?
Yeah, codefoster.com/using-promises.
Yeah, definitely you can read up more there. On my blog, in fact, if we could switch over to my screen for just a second. At palermo4.com, I have an article on there, JavaScript for Windows Store Apps Error Handling. It goes into a lot more detail than I was able to cover today. Some of the logging capabilities, how you create your own custom logging. It goes a little bit into the typing that we went into. How to leave, you know, make sure you leave nothing unhandled. How to do all the promises. It's a pretty lengthy article. It covers even the progresses. So if you wanted to get not only a little bit more on error handling, but even see other implementations of promises, that's another area that you can go to as well, and that would be under the category. I'd say the fastest way is go to the blog and look for the tag on error, and just click that, and you'll see it pop up in there.
Yeah. One of the questions in the chat is, does the array.sum function shortcut? And the answer is yes. It's one of the nice things about using it. I used to always do, if array.count is zero, then I know that it's an empty array, right?
Right.
Well, it's better to use the every, because then all it has to do is get to a second thing and know that, or all it has to do is get to one thing and
right.
know, yeah, there's at least one case in there, and so it doesn't have to enumerate the whole thing. So there's some real performance advantages for using some and every, just
sure.
like any and all in C#.
And the question, what was the name of that type.js library? You're almost really close in saying it. It's TypeScript.
Yeah, TypeScript is the name of it. One person asked about the panorama effect. I'm thinking that you're probably referring, yeah, in fact, you clarified, yes, it's the parallax effect. The parallax effect is a really popular effect where as you pan linearly across the page, a differently sized background image behind the content scrolls as well, but at a different rate, creating a three-dimensional effect. It's a really popular effect. It really does look great. It's not built into the platform anywhere yet, but it's also not very difficult for you to implement. If you just capture the gesture where you know things are moving, and as they move, hook into the position of that background picture and change it at a different rate. So I bet you'll see libraries emerge that handle that for you. I'd like to find, if you do some work on that, it was Amit, if you do some work on that, let me know. Maybe we can put it into Ocho.js and provide it for everybody. That'd be cool.
Question was, you'd like to see some coverage of features and patterns and practices for using or developing for Windows 8 apps. Tomorrow is so full of content. I mean, there may be some sprinkling in. Of course, we're going to recommend some do's and don'ts. And so you're going to get that for sure. But there's so much to cover, as well as just how to implement the features. And of course, we're not going to show you the wrong way, but we're going to show you some of the best practices that are out there right now. And just so you can even implement these particular features. And there's so much to cover. I mean, it's going to be a ride, and hopefully you'll continue to join, even if it hurt the brain a little bit today. I think it's going to be a good hurt for tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be a good pain. JavaScript, that's how I define JavaScript. It's a good pain.
Yeah, it is.
Let's continue answering these questions. Is TypeScript on the CERT exam? I'm almost certain that it's not. Mm-hmm. TypeScript was just announced less than 2 weeks ago, very recently. And so I don't think it's had time to be added to the CERT exam yet.
No.
In case it's not clear, the E and C functions in the WinJS promises implementation, remember that those are just shortcuts so that they're faster to call, and you can call them whatever you want. But the C is complete, E is error, and P is progress. So some people give those their full name, complete, error, and progress, but I use the shortcuts.
Sure. The question regarding the difference of Node.js, what it does versus WinJS, in essence, Node.js is a server-side technology, and WinJS is a client-side technology. So you would use Node to provide a server-based way of doing things. It has a workflow. But WinJS is going to be used in order to provide a library specifically for Windows 8 clients.
Yeah, absolutely. There actually are certain things, and there's a good document about this on dev.windows.com. If you look up the WinJS library, there are certain things in the WinJS library that are compatible with the web at large, that don't have dependencies on WinRT, on the Windows platform itself. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see this tomorrow. Whenever you're working in a Windows 8 app, you can imagine that it feels like you're in a website, but you have access to the local machine. And so that seems like an inherently unsafe thing. You know, you have access to the location, the webcam, if you've asked the user for these rights. So you have access to these things. So we have to make a differentiation between local context and web context. And certain parts of the WinJS library will work even when you're in web context. You'll still be able to use those parts of the WinJS library, even though it is a proprietary library. Is there a portrait and landscape view for Windows Phone 8 and tablet-style Windows 8 devices? There's definitely portrait and landscape for both Windows Phone 8 and for Windows 8 devices. And tomorrow we'll talk about media queries and how you can use the CSS media queries to respond to what view state the user is currently in. And if they're in portrait, automatically your CSS is applied for portrait. And if when they rotate it to landscape, immediately your landscape CSS takes effect.
Yeah. Question on TypeScript. You know what? Right now, the main beneficiary of TypeScript would be those that are doing website development, at least from the Visual Studio extension side. Although, if you go to TypeScript, one of the sample projects they have in there is actually a Windows 8 app, and you can download it and you can see their journey. They did a whole bunch of hacking to make the TypeScript work. So it's not out of the box, just ready to go to write your Windows 8 apps with. But there is a way to do it. The TypeScript folks have said they're on it. You know,
yeah.
They want to have us using it for Windows 8. It's just not built for that at this moment.
Yeah, and it's really just not built into the IDE. It's not built
right
into the build process for, you know, just hitting F5 and watching it work on your computer. It definitely works. It's just that TypeScript has to be kind of compiled or translated into JavaScript, and there's not an automated way to do that quite yet.
Okay, one question, one more, you think?
A couple, two more. I see two questions that are the same. Any reason to go with JavaScript versus C#? The main reason, I think, is whichever language stack you love. If you really like working in JavaScript and HTML, I would stick with that. If you've got skill in those, you're definitely going to be able to recapture it. If you've got a whole team of developers with skill in that, then you're going to recapture that skill reuse for all of those developers. Now, as far as the inherent abilities of the different stacks, there's quite a lot of it that the user would never notice that was designed that way. There, if you go look on Windows 8 right now and you go through the store and you start looking at what these different apps in the store were built in, you probably have no idea. There's a lot of parity between the two.
Yeah.
Now, there's certain edge cases where C-sharps and XAML's strengths shine, and other areas where the JavaScript strengths shine. You can, when you're working in an HTML JavaScript environment, just go to microjs.com for a minute and do some scrolling. It's got an infinite scroll, and I think there's an infinite number of JavaScript libraries on microjs.com. Just go scroll for a little while. All of those can be plugged in. You want to do facial recognition?
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
You want to do date calculations? Done. All that stuff is just done for JavaScript. So that's a pretty huge advantage.
Yeah. In fact, that might be a place to look for one who was asking about the OCR stuff. Go over there. Check it out. There's a lot of third-party stuff for that as well.
Absolutely. One more? Go for it.
Let's see.
Somebody here is throwing some love for MS Grid. Yeah, I love MS Grid as well. So nice.
Yeah. As far as WinJS with ASP.NET Forms. No.
That's like apples and oranges.
Yeah, ASP.NET Web Forms is a server-side technology that produces HTML that will run in a browser. So it's running on the server. WinJS is for clients.
Yep, absolutely. And then somebody else asked if we could talk just a little bit about the class that's going to happen tomorrow. Absolutely. It's going to follow the content for the 70-480 exam. So you can actually go to the Microsoft certification site and look up the 70-480. There's a tab there for skills. There's a tab there for the skills measured, and you can see what those skills are. So, for instance, you want me to bring this up? All right, let's go ahead and bring this up. I'm just going to do a search on my favorite search engine for 70-480, and I'm going to look for the Microsoft test exam. That's too. Oh, there it is, the second one. It's so wonderful. Actually, the first one, if you don't count the ad. Okay, so here is the exam. And if you go to the skills measured, here we go. All about store apps, user interface, user interaction, security, and data. That's what we're going to be covering tomorrow. That's the scope and sequence. Again, this is a condensed course. So we're going to be covering some of all of that.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm excited about it.
This has been fun.
It's been very fun. I'm so happy. I know we've had some of you that have been watching from around the world, and it's been very late or early in the morning, depending on how you look at it. So we appreciate it. We'd really encourage you right now to go to the poll.
Yeah.
And fill that out, and we hope you really enjoyed the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that I've been sitting here for a long time. I know you've been sitting there for a long time, too. I really appreciate it. Now you can go stretch.
That's right. So thank you very much.
And I'll see you tomorrow.
You bet.